The Committee of the Whole will come to order. We are continuing with consideration of the Budget Bill, House Bill 1. Chairman Harshman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would move, Mr. Chairman, Section 211, Board of Equalizations, on page 50 of your cheat sheet, page 92 of your budget bill, and defer that explanation to Representative Burkhart.
Representative Burkhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The JEC adopted the governor's budget reductions of $79,128 in the form of a reduction of one full-time position, which is currently vacant, and then backfilling some of that work with contract staff on an as-needed basis at a lower cost. And this is footnote number 3 on your cheat sheets. Further, the JEC adopted the governor's recommendations on the transfer of funds to ETS. Are there any questions?
Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 211 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Section 220, Environmental Quality Council, page 51 on your cheat sheet, page 92 in your bill, and defer to Representative Wallace.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Environmental Quality Council is one of our smaller agencies. They have 3 employees. And we adopted the governor's rec to reduce the agency's budget by $34,682 in general funds. This was operating expenses contract services. During their testimony in front of the committee, they noted that, you know, they're a quasi-judicial entity that needs to hold hearings around a lot of our mineral industry situations, and that workload has actually reduced because of the decline in those industries, and so they felt that this was well within something that they could handle. And on top of that, we also transferred $612 general funds to ETS as part of the IT consolidation. And that's it.
You ready for the question? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 220 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Section 270. Excuse me, I don't think that one's in your bill. Is it? Office Administrator, that's not in your bill. I think we are on to CapCon. Let me look. This last one, there's some boards here, Mr. Chairman. Here it is. If you keep flipping in your cheat sheet, page 52, members of your cheat sheet, page 93 of your bill is section 13, Wyoming euthanasia, and I will defer to, I think it's Representative Burkhart.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the Animal Euthanasia Certification Board, the JC appropriated $47,527 in general funds to reimburse the budget reserve account for money expended but not appropriated to the board. This was done to balance the board's budget prior to integrating the board into the Board of Veterinary Medicine. This is footnote number 2 on your budget bill. The JC further adopted the governor's recommendations on ETS transfers. Are there any questions?
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 13 has passed committee of the whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just, members, if the rest of these boards, you can skip through. These are all professional fees. They're not general funds. And they were IT cost recovery. So you can flip through, Mr. Chairman, to page 60 of your cheat sheet. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would move Section 3, Capital Construction, and also as a part of Section 006, Administration and Information, the Capital Construction. And, Mr. Chairman, I would explain that section myself. It's page 60 on your cheat sheet, members, and page 95 on your budget bill. And you can see there's only three changes, members, to this. There's three projects in this supplemental. The first one is, you see the first footnote, if you go down the column with your, just run your finger down the column, you see the number 1 next to SFD, Snowy Range Academy. And you can see the $4 million, if you follow across to other funds, $4 million. S6 is a school foundation, purchase of a school in Albany County, and we really have no method in our statutes to accommodate this, and we didn't want to set a precedent, so we're purchasing it through A&I with school foundation funds. The second, number 2, as you fall down, is under military department, Camp Guernsey Utilities. And you can see if you follow across the governor's recommendations of $1.2 million, and that will be, in addition, leveraged with a $1.5 million in federal funds. And then number 3, just below that, members, is also military veterans, cemetery improvements, and those are, that's $840,000, all federal funds. I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have the chairman expand on what the purpose of this Snowy Range Academy is. We're using foundation funds for it, and I want to know is it for an education purpose that deals specifically with public education, and how does that fit into the overall mission of public education, I guess.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Snowy Range Academy, as many of you know, is a charter school that is, and this is a public school, and these are public school children, but it's a unique situation because of Wyoming, just really our population and our setup. We don't have charter schools like many other states, and so this one has been around for over a decade. We have been paying the lease on this building all this time. So really this resulted from a study on what should we do. Should we continue to lease? Should we purchase this building, perhaps build another facility? Are there facilities in the district that we could repurpose? And the result of this study was that this building, which retail is actually more in the $6 million range, as I recall, and our price came in at $4 million for this. And part of it is leased, will be some income coming off of that. So that's how this worked out. It was it's kind of a unique situation in Wyoming. We have these because we're so small, and so we had really no mechanism to run it through school facilities, and so we ran it through Section 6, Administration and Information, with the rest of our CAPCON.
Seeing no further comments, I'll call for the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 3, Section 006 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next is Section 57, and that is page 60 on your cheat sheet, that same page, and page 97 in your bill. And I want to make sure. I'll defer to Representative Escobel. And I don't see Representative Escobel. There I see Representative. I thought I was going to step up and pinch hit here.
Representative Escobel.
Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman. Community College CapCon. That's page 97 of your bill. And we're doing that all at once. We got a Eastern Wyoming College Ag Complex, $4.7 million. Got the Douglas Campus, $9.6 million. Northwest Community College, Gillette Ag Complex, $4.7 million. And the Sheridan Ag Complex, $7.8 million. And that Throne Rider Center, $11.7 million. And then on top at the Northwest Community College, Yellowstone Building, $14.2 million. Wellness at Western Wyoming Community College, $5.1 million. Academic Space Center, Central Wyoming Community College, $3.5 million. Lander Improvements, $1.9 million. And a Workforce Training Facility of $1.7 million. That totaled $61.337 million. Community College Capital Construction.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 57 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move... So just to before we leave this page, we're on the same page of the cheat sheet. So those 1 through 5 are the new projects, and none of those have state funding. Those are other funds. So you can see those footnotes on your left. Okay, Mr. Chairman, so I'd move Section 67, University of Wyoming Capital Construction, just to the engineering building. And you can see the footnote, JC adopted the Gov's Rex of $30 million general fund, and we added an additional $25 million general fund, and making this total appropriation for this biennial budget of $69,200,000 for renovation, expansion, engineering building. And we also added, Mr. Chairman, footnote number 2, $5 million general fund for the renovation of the arena auditorium. Stand for any questions.
Seeing none, I'll call Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the good chairman. The amount of money that we're putting in University of Wyoming, and I think this is one-time funding, or there's a mix of these two. As we're talking about, you know, our senior citizens or, you know, any project you want to talk about just to help our local whatever, is do we feel good about putting this much money in University of Wyoming and, you know, one-time funding versus ongoing? And could you talk about that, Mr. Chair?
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the question was about ongoing and one-time funding. These are one-time capital construction funds for the new engineering building. I don't know. I'll take a little liberty then, Mr. Chairman. So it's estimated the total is about $115 million, and part of that will be private donations and match. You know, I don't think we're far enough along with level one study
into a, as firm a cost, but that's the estimates at this point to build that Tier 1 engineering facility.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too question the wisdom of, I know this is one-time funding. I get that. But my question is this the time for one-time funding of that amount of money when we are drastically cutting budgets in every other area? Or would that money better be spent to just simply maintain status quo in some of the other programs that we are tasked with serving people and postpone the building at the University of Wyoming a little bit longer?
Any other further comments or questions? I'll call for the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. Representative Blickery, privilege of the floor.
Mr. Chairman, personal privilege. Thank you. Folks, straight up there, if she'd stand up, is a young lady from Gillette named Jennifer Thomas. She's a realtor that's here just to see how we work.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That takes us to 300 sections of the budget, and that those start on page 62 of your cheat sheet. But, members, I'd like you to use your bill for this part. I think it's easier to look at these because most of these are narratives. And so it's on page 100 of your bill. So I'll just wait a minute for everybody to flip that, and then we can just go down the list of these. I guess I have to move each section and ask questions. It's on page 100 of your budget bill. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd move section 300, budget balancers and transfers. Paragraph E is the SIPA account we've talked about, and really this is if we're fortunate enough now in the next 5-6 months to the end of this fiscal year to have income come in over the Craig projection, and I'll editorialize on Craig probably at a later point, but I think, Craig we've used for decades. We've got the best economists we have, the best people there are, and I know there's a movement by some people to say, well, Craig doesn't know this, and Craig, at some point, we budget, everything we do is budgeted on the Craig forecast. So the Craig forecast then, this paragraph E will set up what's called the Strategic Investment and Projects account. And anything over the Craig projection but under the 5% SPA amount, the spending policy amount. And really what this is, we're setting this up so if you think back to the governor's request, he talked about using this irregular capital gains. And these were from a restructuring of the portfolio, not a rebalancing, which happens often, but a restructuring that occurs every 5-6 years. And in that, you line up your fund managers, and some you will keep, and some you will let go. And when you let some go and hire new ones, they sell out, and sometimes there are capital gains from that. And so it's if we get increases from those, they're a one-time windfall. Well, we didn't want to appropriate off of what might or might not be a one-time windfall. So we said, if this happens, we won't tip it into the LSRA. We will set up this SIPA account, Strategic Investment. And these are the things that the chief executive talked about. We still owe an additional $25 million as the state's requirement on the Madison project. Landfills is still out there. Cities, towns, and counties were part of those requests. And then these things that we've talked about in the past that we've invested, had placeholders for these transformational energy projects that, you know, coal to gas, gas to gas, those kinds of things. If those were to come, and we would have a set aside for that. Now, you can see on line 20 that amount that is over the Craig and is under the SPA is $80.8 million.
And that would require us to come back again. This is not an appropriation. This is just a placeholder. If, in fact, if it does happen, we'll come back here and talk about some governor's requests this time next year. So that's paragraph E. Paragraph F, as I alluded to, the governor can make requests from that account if, in fact, it does fill up. And then paragraph G is a budget balancer on the school side that says any unprofiled, unexpended, unobligated funds in the permanent land fund holding account over the $450 million would tip to the common school permanent land fund. And so those are those budget balancers, and I would stand for any questions on Section 300.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just so I have a clear understanding on this SIPA account, it's just another little savings account that the governor's office can look to. It still goes through the full appropriation process. I just want to make sure I'm real clear on that. And so I don't – you're just going to cut a little bit out that we don't tip over into our permanent savings?
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, if it would, under our current policies, tip to our temporary savings, the rainy day fund, the LSRA. So these would hold before any tip would occur and allow for appropriation out of next year. And you're right. I think your first point, you said these are not appropriated. This is simply a holding account before it tips into the LSRA so we can come back next year, if it even occurs. We're not sure if it's going to occur. We might have losses. But if it occurs and we have this money, this would be a place that the governor could make these requests for these large projects. Madison, $25 million. Where are you going to find that? It's getting tougher to find those amounts out of the general fund. You know, the landfills piece that we've talked about, cities, towns, and counties. Where do you find, you know, last time what we did in the biennial budget, $130 million. Where are you going to find that in the general fund? It's going to get tougher and tougher. So this is a set-aside that would require our appropriation. Absolutely.
Chairman Gingrey.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure I understood. So last year in the budget bill, we had a deal where we actually were spending some of this money before we actually realized it. And that was a concern because we were spending money that wasn't actually in the bank account. If I'm understanding you correctly, now we're going to make sure that this is going to be real money sitting in that account before we actually decide to spend it. And number two, it's only going to happen every few years. It won't happen every year because you don't switch all your people out that's holding your investments. So this could happen. And what you're saying under the current numbers, and I know these can change, we're looking at you could have potentially up to $80 million go into that account.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your memory from last year is correct, and that was the first time that in my previous 10 years that we'd ever appropriated money that had not actually arrived, that we'd hoped it will arrive. And you're correct, and those were on two capital construction projects. And I think, frankly, it was a mistake. We didn't realize it, that it was written that way. It wasn't an intention. I think it was a mistake we made, frankly. And so that's to answer that question. The money did arrive. It did get appropriated, and we did that. Two capital construction projects. Now, your next question then is about, absolutely, these are what were termed irregular, or another term was used, abnormal, and I've used them as one-time windfall. And I think the other executive who guards the purse and invests for us calls them a windfall as well. These might happen every 5-6 years, might happen. And so this is not a thing that would happen every year, but we want to plan if, in fact, because this will happen when we're gone. It'll happen at the end of the fiscal year. And do we want it to tip into the LSRA? Maybe some of you want that to happen. We thought that we know we have these big needs out there. They're going to come next year in a biennial budget, and we want to set kind of a spot there that if we have this one-time windfall, we can use for some one-time projects. And the number is $80.8 million. That's correct. And it's over the Craig amount, but still under the SPA.
Representative Nicholas.
Part of the other rationale of this is that last year we also had an appropriation out of the LSRA. And from a strategic standpoint and a management standpoint, I think it's appropriations position that we don't want to, if we roll this over into the LSRA, then the first thing that would happen is the governor would come back or whomever with an appropriation out of the LSRA. And so we want to avoid that before it ships over there so we recognize exactly what that fund is for, that it is a rainy day account or a rainy season account, and so the monies just aren't, we don't get into the process of dipping into that fund at all. In fact, with any luck at all, we'll be able to pour over into the LSRA if we have additional capital that shows up, but when it does, we want it to stay there. So that's part of our philosophy in creating this SIPA account.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe for the last speaker. So by establishing this SIPA account, we're hoping to prevent the governor and future governors from looking to the LSRA for appropriations in his budget. Is that, I mean, just want to find out what we're doing.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in response, this is really in the context, if you remember back to the governor's letter at the beginning of the budget cycle, the governor requested that we directly appropriate this $80 million, and he had the different projects laid out. And it really would have been a conditional appropriation that if this money comes in, it would be spent like, you know, as he had laid out. And so this was really an approach that really met those concerns of the governor, but did so without spending money that we didn't have. So we recognize those as probably as legitimate needs that we needed to look at, that we likely will have the funds to pay for those, but we're not going to appropriate them now before we actually know if we have the funds or not. And so the SIPA account was really set up to meet that concern that the governor had with these one-time kind of big capital projects. The realization among the committee that likely we're probably going to have that money, but so we'll set it aside, but we're not going to move forward on it without a separate appropriation. So that's sort of the history behind where we got here, and it's also in the context of that. I'm not sure it was inadvertent, but I certainly think it was a mistake of appropriating out this amount in the last budget cycle, and a decision that we weren't going to do that.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, but it still seems to me that we're appropriating money that we're not going to get yet and allowing that to be spent on the chance that it comes in. I might be confused, but that's just how I see that.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the reason that's not correct is this money is going to be here. If it comes in, this money will be here when we come around next session, and we will have to go through the budget process to appropriate it out. And even though it's set aside for these one-time capital expenditures, they are those at that time when we appropriate it, those will be amounts that the chief executive has to support and demonstrate and convince the JAC and this body that those appropriations are necessary. So it is a set aside, but it's not appropriated, and there's no shortcuts to appropriation. We have to go through the whole process to get that done.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so my mind is clear on this, you're anticipating that the governor may use the unrealized capital gains as a part of his calculation. When realized, then that could be appropriated. Is that reasonably correct?
Chairman Hirschman.
Mr. Chairman, that's another way to probably say that, and I think where this expectation of these unrealized gains is coming from this restructuring of the portfolio.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, members, and that's in Governor's Letter Number 4, and so, again, those things he talked about, the $25.8 million for Gillette Madison. He had $20 million more for landfills. $30 million for these transformational energy projects, and I think $5 million for locals. And he, in his governor's letter 4, asked us to go ahead and appropriate that. And we felt uncomfortable appropriating money we did not have. Now, in regards to the $150 million natural gas set aside, that's still the law. It's still in this budget. And that is not
an appropriation out of the LSRA, that is a set-aside, and it is solely tied to the price of natural gas in our Craig forecast. And if natural gas were to drop to a dollar, let's say, and Craig's estimating at $3.25 right now, and so we miss by a long ways, there's $150 million in there to make up that miss because it's such a volatile market. So that is not an appropriation. That is a set-aside. Not one penny's been spent from that. We didn't need it. Natural gas prices held steady throughout a very warm summer. And we're hoping for a nice cold winter, particularly in the Midwest, and keep those prices at the Craig forecast. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to move the rest of the Section 300 or call for the question on...
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This $80 million that's being put into the SIPA account that was diverted from the LSRA, is there any mechanism to trip it back in if we decide not to spend it, or is the plan just to sit on it and then appropriate it out for whatever we want later? I mean, what we're doing essentially is creating coffee cans so that we as a body feel like we can't touch that money. We're taking money off the table. We're also preventing it from going into the LSRA, which I understand we don't want to go back into the LSRA. Not questioning the justification for it, but what's the long-term plan if we don't have a plan to spend it right now?
Chairman Harshman.
Good question, Mr. Chairman. It'll tip to the LSRA at the end of the biennium. If we decide not to spend it, it will roll to the LSRA, just like we currently have set up for the rest of our funds. So it's going to be those same decisions we have, spending versus saving, every time we're here. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Section 300, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 300 has passed. Chairman Harshman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 301. Members, this is a governor's request to add $250,000 to the Public Library Endowment Challenge Fund. And, of course, this has been with us now for 7, 8, 9 years, and it's been a very successful program for our local libraries. We've used up much of the match, and the governor asked for more, and we concurred. So I'd stand for any questions on Section 301.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 301 has passed. Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Section 307. Members, this is a cleanup of language. The governor rightly vetoed this last year because we had the wrong numbers, and we've got new data. This is simply the correct numbers, and if you follow Section 307 at the very bottom of page 101, you can see the last three words, electing single coverage. That's the amount per month. If you flip over to paragraph B, it's employee plus dependent children, that amount. Paragraph C, employee plus dependent spouse coverage, and then the employee electing family coverage in D, and as well as the split policy for two employees on paragraph E. So this is simply cleanup language with the right amount. So I'd stand for questions and call for the question on Section 307.
All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Section 307 is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 311 on page 102 and 103. And members, this deals with the 100 series personnel service. Now, we allow one agency to flex their 100 series. Every other agency in state government, and we started doing this about 6 years ago, the 100 series, which is the bulk of many budgets, pays for employees' salary and benefits. If those are not used, say you have an opening or those kind of things, those will revert back to the general fund. We allow two agencies, the Department of Health and the new agency of Enterprise Technology, some flexibility with their 100 series. They can move those around now through the B11 process from division to division inside their agency. So, for example, this is a brand new agency. They do zero-based budgeting. They will come back and we'll zero-base them again. We did this last year. It allows them a little flexibility if they have an opening for a few months to take that 100 series savings, apply it to equipment, or contracts or those type of things. So it's a continuation of what we've done and added enterprise technology with the Department of Health on this. So I'd stand for any questions. If there are none, I'd call for the question on Section 311.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 311 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 103 is Section 312. I'd move Section 312. It says position freeze. Members, I would say that this is more of a position cap, and the JEC added language down on line 22 through line 26 to really tighten this cap some more. And, you know, and it's a tough situation. We're gone as part-time legislators, and say we have an opening for the Director of Homeland Security. Well, we probably need to fill that at some point. And so it's easy to say, well, we're going to have a freeze and you can't ever hire anybody that leaves state government. But that's not a practical way to really run this enterprise. So we've tightened this up, though, and the governor's got to certify that these are, in effect, a critical necessity to operations of state government. So I'd stand for questions. If not, I'd call for the question on Section 312.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 312 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 312 or 317 on page 104. This deals with our community colleges. We've had kind of a mixed bag with major maintenance, and this we tried to fix three colleges that we inadvertently left off the major maintenance calculations, and then we inadvertently hurt five others. So we're going to come back with a little more cleanup language in this section. Needs a little bit more work, but the idea is there's a few that are out there that we need to probably roll in and treat equitably throughout our community college system. So, again, we'll have probably another cleanup amendment on this section. I'd stand for any questions.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 317 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 319. And members, this is our language from last year directing 4% budget cuts and this 8% budget cuts and 4% per year and then 8% of the total. And we're looking, if you want to go over to page, so I'd move Section 319 on page 104 and 105. And members, over on 105, I think this is where we're going to have to, on line 11, where it talks about reductions totaling 8%. Of the 2012 budget session. So we've directed now the executive branch to come back with reductions that are 8% less in this next biennium, next year when we're here, than what was budgeted in this biennium. Now, that amount, if you said, well, how much money is that? How much money is 8%? It's around $200 million. How much did we cut this year? Well, we cut about $60 million. But the problem is not all of that $60 million that we cut out of this fiscal year's budget can be biennialized. Some people, frankly, took overages where we probably had a little slush in the 900 series and just gave that back. Well, it's hard to double that. Or they took a position that had been open for 18 months and used all that money, 18 months worth, for this 12-month cut. Can't double that. So out of that $60 million, there's some debate still going on with the branch downstairs. We hope that maybe $43 million of that 60 can be doubled. So that would put you at 85-ish million. We've already gotten there out of that 200 and a biennial figure now. So, and we're going to need to talk about this. And I think probably bring an amendment to look at a couple scenarios, maybe a 4%, 6%, and 8% cut. It's not that difficult for agencies to go through and identify and give us some options that we can look at. So we'll talk more about that. But that's in paragraph A. And I would, is there anything else there? I guess members, we on line 14, new language that we put the Department of Health at 6%. We moved them from 8 to 6. And then paragraph B, we basically struck out the language for the judicial branch. I think we probably need to talk about that some more. And in addition, there's language in here. I think that's it. I think I've covered all that. So I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the good chairman. One thing I wanted to point out, that as we're talking about these 8% cuts, it's of the general fund that we are supplying to agencies. Some agencies have most of their, I'm talking about one that has $150 million, and only $9 million, say $10 million, is general fund. So as they're reducing their budget, they're really not reducing of their total budget, you know, hardly anything. So if you take an 8%, 6% cut of $10 million versus $150 million, it really isn't that much of a cut. And just wanted to make aware of that. And then ask the good chairman why did you strike the last lines out, taking the judicial system? You said you were going to have to come back and talk about that, but why don't we just leave it in and then talk about it? So,
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on that last issue, the discussion regarding the court's budgets, really as we went in, there's little room for maneuver within those budgets, because remember last year we provided a bill that increased the salaries for judges, and most of those budgets, you know, you've essentially got four people, the judge, a secretary, a court reporter, and a law clerk, and we have statutorily required one of those salaries to be exactly where it is, and we've got, and with those four people, there's not really room to cut personnel. And so we did force them this year to come to us with those cuts, and they did, and it was kind of shaving here and there outside those statutory mandated amounts. But really when it got down to it, unless we were going to go back and cut personnel from those courts or change our mind on what we did last year and sort of reverse those salaries, it doesn't really make sense to ask for additional cuts, because they're kind of where they are. And so that was sort of the logic, that because they're such small agencies, really going forward, there are certainly agencies with fat to trim, and we need to focus on those agencies, but we need to focus on those agencies and not agencies where this body has really decided what they're going to spend, and they've cut down to what we've told them they're going to spend.
Chairman Hirschman.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. And it's pretty tight, and that's what we need to probably talk about, and I appreciate the good representative's question. But, I mean, just for example, look at the cuts in the satellite courts. Couldn't get that cut through, really. I mean, it's tough. And so they're pretty tight budgets in this judicial branch, and as the good representative said, most of it we've done. We've mandated. So thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Section 319 has passed. Chairman Hirschman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 323. I'd move Section 323 on page 106. Members, this is local government distributions. Paragraph G, we changed the language to allow really equipment purchases and those kind of ongoing recurring equipment type expenditures, but we kept the language not to be used for salary adjustments or additional personnel or increased personnel benefits. So we modified that language in G. H, of course, is the $20 million in addition to the 40 that will go out in August. This is another 20. So on top of that 40 will be $60 million in direct distribution this August as the bill now stands. Paragraph Romanet 2 on line 23, we adjusted for small communities. There's always a base amount. And the first small community of population of 35 or less is 5,000. Well, what we said is, as we're going to treat this 20 separately, so everybody will get a base amount again. So those small communities are going to get a little bump of 5,000, or in every community 10,000. So that's Romanet 2. So I'd stand for any questions on Section 323.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been getting a slew of emails from small towns, and they, I guess I haven't decided whether they realize that you have amended footnote G or not, but as I look at that, I don't see that it's that onerous to live with, and I'm just wondering if you've had any input like I have. I just seems like I'm getting, I don't know why they're picking on me, but I'm getting a lot of emails from small town clerks that think that the salary adjustment, well, the only thing that's left in the footnote is personnel type stuff. And I just want to know if you have any comments on that issue.
Chairman Hushman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think as appropriators, these are one-time dollars. And when it gets really tough, we probably won't be able to appropriate to local communities. You're going to cut DD programs, or you're going to cut distributions to local communities. It's going to be tough. You're going to cut things in our corrections facility, or you're going to cut some of this. I don't know, we're already faced with those choices every year. But this will be some of the, we didn't want to set up an entitlement with our local communities, basically. And go ahead and use them for recurring equipment things, but not for these real expenses that drive budgets or these personnel costs.
Chairman Renn?
Actually, there is recurring expenditures allowed if this footnote goes through as amended, right? I mean, it's not as onerous as you have just painted it. It seems to me like the only recurring expense that isn't allowed by this footnote is personnel. Is that right?
Chairman Hushman?
That is correct.
Representative Nicholas?
Thank you. And just for some clarification for the House members, this kind of came in through two phases. We had kind of two meetings and then a round robin. During the first round robin, Joint Appropriations Committee voted to reduce this down to $10 million versus $20 million. And we did that in part because it was, by that time, the fuel tax had already passed. So with the fuel tax, that's another $38 million going to cities and counties on an annual basis. And so we said, well, do we really need to give them $20 million in addition to what they're going to get for the fuel tax? Then we came back. We had a little bit stronger side on the Senate show up, and various county commissioners and other folks, and the vote went the other way. But the point being here is it's not an easy thing to start cutting one of these purse strings, because the minute that we hold back, then you're going to hear from your constituents saying, don't take our money away. So the question is, do we save or do we spend? And if so, then where does the money go? So it's just one of those issues that we all got to address, and it's just always gets harder and harder to say no, depending on how closer and closer you get to the fire.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 323 has passed. Chairman Hushman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 329. Members, this is it's $16.9 million that we did not spend because of the rate holiday. Our costs were not as much in our group insurance program as we thought they'd be. So we want to hold this money in the auditor's office. You can read the last line on 24 and 25. Shall use for any purpose without further action by the legislature. Probably in the future we're going to see these costs go back up. We think it was kind of a one-time issue with this dip in our insurance rates, and so we wanted to place that money for probably further use on this issue. So stand for any questions.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 329 is passed. Chairman Hushman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 330 on page 108. And members, this is employee compensation. Had different proposals from our chief executive. Some was to honor and move folks up to 91% on the Hayes study. The other part was a bonus for a merit bonus segment of that. And all these are would be ongoing costs that would biennialize and would move throughout the budget and continue to compound. Well, your JEC decided on a couple different actions. The first in paragraph A is $600,000 for the judiciary. This was vetoed by the governor. We had a little separation of powers issue, and it was vetoed a couple of years ago. We've included that back in. That money has been sitting. It's not been spent, and we've used that, and that will be a permanent pay increase on paragraph A. Paragraph B then starts what we call a retention incentive. You can't really use the term bonus payment. It's more of a, and so this is the proper language, and it's 1%. The employee's salary, and we have a cap on it on line 20 of $120,000. So say if you were a worker that made $200,000, your cap is going to be at $1,200. So it's going to be 1% up to $120,000. Paid out in two different equal amounts in September and December. And here's how we paid for this, really. There was some leftover money that was not spent from a previous compensation adjustment. And so we used that plus $315,000 of new general funds, and then $5.8 from reversions from this that was not used for compensation previously. And so then you can see, follow over on page 109, you can see the amounts for the state executive branch and Romanet I. Romanet II is the judicial department. Romanet 3 is for the legislative branch. Romanet 4 for community colleges. Romanet 5 for the University of Wyoming. Now when you flip over on page 110, we did the same thing for our K-12 system. And you can see in line 3, $8.1 million. And we have qualifying employees on paragraph E. We have some qualifiers for all of this, folks who are employed, qualified employees, and those folks who have satisfactory evaluations. And then finally, members on page 111, paragraph F, that none of these one-time retention bonuses can be used for any purpose for remuneration in any of our retirement plans. So it does not count against retirement. And then paragraph G, any unused monies in this one-time retention, which there will be a lot. There will be a lot of it that will not be used. A significant amount will revert. And so I'd stand for any questions then on Section 330.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, I have some concern about this. I mean, the Joint Education Committee studied labor market pressures and studies and made a recommendation to the Joint Appropriations Committee that was adopted by the Joint Appropriations Committee that we not do an external cost adjustment this year. This appears to be an end run around that, in my opinion. And the total cost of the state is actually closer to $15 million by the time you incorporate the 2011 reversions. So I need some justification as to why we're going to spend $15 million.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In December, when we met as a JEC and received the Joint Education recommendations, we also our language as we left that meeting in December was that there would be no salary increases for K-12 or our state employees, and we would not consider an ECA for the K-12 system unless we considered one for the state employees. And so that's why we put in this one-time retention bonus.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 330 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Section 331 on page 111. This is the Jamestown Rio Vista Water and Sewer District. The bottom line is we have it's in Sweetwater County. There hasn't been a payment made since 1982. We've been carrying it on the books. There is a process to pick up these loan loss. And we've used all that reserve of $100,000, and you can see then we're going to, on line 2, We approved $422,000 from the general fund to pay back the permanent mineral trust fund to this water district is defunct, and we're going to clean it off the books. It's been here for years and years and years. So I'd stand for any questions on Section 331.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 331 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Section 332. Members, this is really a cleanup on the way we do business, and I would just tell you that the JC saw half a dozen of these come through our budgets, but I'd say our staff saw many more dozens of when a position is funded, it should be funded at the unit level, and we should be able to see that in this unit, this position, and this is the work they do. Well, it's not been done really correctly, and we have a state system, budget request, the IBAR system, and really we haven't, it's been kind of a swag, I would say, and we want this more detailed information from all of our agencies, and then everybody's using the same system, and we're very clear on what we're appropriating funds. When we appropriate them to a position, we know exactly what unit they're being funded out of. So this is a request and a cleanup, and it's not, frankly, much more work, if any. It should be being done anyway, and it's, frankly, gotten too loose, and we want to tighten it up. So I'd stand for any questions.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 332 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 334, the Director of the Department of Health and the Insurance Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, I think I missed one. Mr. Chairman, if I could back up. Members, Section 333 on page 112, District Court Budget Commission. Really, a similar issue as Section 332, although it's this whole aligning budgets with expenditures and this whole uniform accounting. And as a third branch of government, we've had to kind of coax this branch at times to make sure that we're all kind of following the same process. And so what this does is that we have this uniformity in our expenditure accounting and budget submissions by our third branch of government. So I'd stand for any questions on Section 333.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 333 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're almost finished. Section 334 requires that the Director of the Department of Health and also the Insurance Commissioner shall monitor all federal rulemaking related to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and report back to us any changes in rules or any rulemaking that might affect our bottom line, really, the fiscal impacts to the state. So I'd stand for questions.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 334 is passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 335 is the budget reduction on the county and prosecuting attorneys. And really, this says what a bill we just passed through the House here recently, that if we run short of money for county prosecuting attorneys, we're going to reimburse on a pro rata format. So that's Section 335. Stand for any questions.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Section 335 has passed. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Section 336, similar for the budget reduction for tax refund for the elderly and disabled. And if we run out of money, it will be a proportional refund. For example, if you were due a refund of $100, and we run out of money and have to spread that pro rata, it would be perhaps $98. It's going to be a small amount, but we want to make sure that what we appropriate, we can actually accomplish by law. So I'd stand for any questions.
All those in favor? Did he move it? Okay. All those in favor of Section 336, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 336 is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 400, the effective immediately, and call for the question.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 400 has passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think, do we have to have a question now?
Yeah.
On the entire bill. So, and I just say, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate everybody's attention, and if any questions, we'll try to help best we can, and we'll find the answer at some point. And really like to thank the Appropriations Committee. I went to lunch today with another member. I thought, dude, this is the first time I've been out at lunch all year. And so we appreciate really the work that your members have done in there. And so I, if you could, the members of the Appropriations Committee, give them a hand. So now it's, Mr. Chairman, it's the House's budget, and so I'm sure we'll see a few amendments tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question is on Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 1 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion carries. House Bill 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. Floor Majority Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole to consider only the budget bill, rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
With respect to the budget bill, House Bill number 1, the Committee of the Whole took action as follows. Mr. Speaker, with respect to the budget bill, the Committee of the Whole took action as follows. Section 57, adopted. Section 60, adopted. Section 63, adopted. Section 66, adopted. Section 67, adopted. Section 70, adopted. Section 77, adopted. Section 80, adopted. Section 81, adopted. Section 85, adopted. Section 101, adopted. Section 103, adopted. Sections 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 126, 127, 128, 129, 130, 131, 132, 133, 134, 135, 136, 137, 138, 139, 140, and 141 and 142 adopted. Section 151 adopted. Section 157 adopted. Section 160 adopted. Representative Crone announced a conflict of interest on section number 160. Section 167 adopted. Section 205 adopted. Representative Brown moved that the House rise and sit again until 2 p.m. The House reconvened at 2 p.m. Section 211 adopted. Section 212 adopted. Section 13 adopted. Section 006 adopted. Section 057 adopted. Section 067 adopted. Section 300 adopted. Section 301 adopted. Section 307 adopted. Section 311 adopted. Section 312 adopted. Section 317 adopted. Section 319 adopted. Section 323 adopted. Section 329 adopted. Section 330 adopted. Section 331 adopted. Section 332 adopted. Section 333 adopted. Section 334 adopted. Section 335 adopted. Section 336 adopted. Section 400 adopted. Recommended do pass. And that is Representative Croker, Chairman.
Representative Croker. Mr. Speaker, I move for the adoption of the entire Committee of the Whole report on Budget Bill, House Bill 1.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion has carried. The entire report has been adopted. Congratulations, Representative Croker. Just a message or a reminder for everybody. Budget amendments, if you're holding budget amendments for second reading,
If you'd get them into the LSO and get them numbered so that they could be distributed, that would be good. If you have any budget readings, budget amendments that you want for second reading, they have to be in to LSO by 5 p.m. today. Of course, we'll take up the budget on second reading tomorrow. With that, we're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message 224. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 153, unemployment compensation, direct sales, 30 ayes, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 225. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 155, big game licenses, archery licenses, ayes 24, no 6, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 226, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 142, utilities, rate making, ayes 19, noes 11, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 227, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 223, Public Records, Institutions of Higher Education, ayes 23, noes 7, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of signing enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
An act relating to public records, authorizing denial of inspection of records of applications for president of institutions of higher education and associated records as specified, specifying applicability, and providing for an effective date.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act, House Enrolled Act Number 1, being original House Bill 223. I have so signed. We are now at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, and congratulations on getting your bill passed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Couple of announcements. Our LSO tells me something in the order of, the number's probably growing now. There were something in the order of 30 second reading amendments, drafts that are out. And you have to approve those and go back and ask LSO to number them. They're not a done deal if the draft is on your desk. So you need to, if the language drafting in them is satisfactory, then you have to go in and instruct LSO to number them, with the magic of numbering being that you accept that as the correct language and you want to have it distributed. Number two, all second reading amendments to the budget bill have to be submitted to LSO by 5 o'clock. They're not going to accept anything after 5 o'clock. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The House has resolved itself into Committee of the Whole. Representative Croker, welcome back. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 114. The reading clerk will read the bill. Is my list? Okay, scratch that. The first bill for our consideration will be Senate File 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 2, as presented by Senator B. Ballot. An act relating to oil and gas, providing that a registered professional engineer is not required to sign or stamp filings with the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, providing that the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission may require that only Wyoming registered professional engineers shall testify as an expert at a hearing before the commission, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 2, engrossed, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission filings respectfully report saying back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate file 2, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate file 2 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation of it over to the good legislator from Washakie County.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate file 2 is a little bit out of order when we talk about what had happened. When we bring up Senate File 3, you'll see there's a look at some of the practices and the items with the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And what was discovered, if you look at your bill on page 2, is that the testimony was back somewhere in the late 1990s, we required in order to be able to testify in front of the Oil and Gas Commission that a geologist had to be a registered professional geologist. Well, it seemed that that point was left open when it dealt with our professional licensed engineers. And just as a cleanup item, they thought that would be a good thing to make it very clear that in order to testify at the hearings in front of the Oil and Gas Commission that you'd be a professional licensed engineer, which has been the practice for all these years anyway. They just wanted to make sure it was there in statute. At the same time, when they were looking at this cleanup item, they realized that all of the filings that go into the Oil and Gas Commission do not require a PE stamp, and they wanted to just have that cleared up in the statute as well. Again, this has been the practice. It's been going on for a long time. No objections to it. Just a real nice cleanup item. Something simple from the Senate for us to consider. First rattle out of the chute. And I encourage your support.
Chairman Lockhart? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, they do so with the recommendation that Senate File 2 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 2 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 3, introduced by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to oil and gas, amending the qualifications necessary for a person to be appointed supervisor of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 3, State Oil and Gas Supervisor Qualifications, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Readers, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 3 do pass, and I turn the explanation over to the good representative from Washakie County.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, our supervisor of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, as we know, it's been about a year since we lost one. The search has been ongoing. What this bill does, or this Senate file does, is it removes a requirement that the supervisor be a registered professional petroleum engineer or petroleum geologist. And what it does is allows them just to be a petroleum engineer, petroleum geologist, but with at least 10 years experience in his respective fields of expertise. The testimony that we received through the interim and also again here in this session is that many times petroleum engineers will go directly to work for a company and not seek out their professional become a registered professional, their license, so that they have their stamp. And that really the position of supervisor is administrative in its scope. That it does not require the ability to have the stamp or the seal of a registered professional petroleum engineer. That what is important, however, is that it be someone with a great deal of experience. The expertise, the practical expertise to operate in that position, in that capacity as a supervisor, over this very important component of our government. Another problem that comes up is really compensation. These folks can seek 3, 4, 5 times more compensation than private industry. And so what we've found, or the testimony was, is that the ideal person for this is someone with many, many years looking to retire, who can bring a great deal of personal experience, his own expertise, into this position. And so that's why this amendment came in. Just try to make that a little bit simpler to fill that position, but yet with a highly qualified individual. And I'd encourage your support. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number Senate file 3 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 3 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 8. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 8 from the School Facilities Commission, an act relating to school capital construction, clarifying utilization factors within building capacity criteria used by the School Facilities Commission in building needs prioritization, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 8, School Capital Construction Capacity, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobill, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 8, School Capital Construction Capacity, comes from your Select Committee on School Facilities. This is kind of the sister bill, the House bill that started before on our enrollment. There's two pieces now to this whole, depending how determining the size of your school on your enrollment, the one we covered and passed out of this House nearly a month ago. And that put it at a five-year enrollment projection from the day that the building is completed or open for use. This one, members, really, we want to codify what has been existing policy in the commission. And again, most of these efforts come from our committee that when we looked at the buildings that have been built, many of them have been built, frankly, too small. They were already full or near capacity. And Wyoming's going to continue to grow. I mean, it is. We're not going to get smaller. We're going to continue to grow. And this just holds in place that policy, because I think there was a movement to, well, we can squeeze this a little tighter, save a little money, do this. And so what it does, members, is it recognizes, and really the bill is really on page 3, and it talks about these utilization factors. And you think about a high school, for example. There's a welding shop in a high school. Well, you're not going to teach home ec in that room. You just can't do it. Or you wouldn't teach business in the chemistry lab. It's just not set up for it. So not every space can be used 100% of the time. And I'll just tell you, as we build buildings now, it's not like when we went to school and where this was Mrs. Jones's room and that was her room. It's not that way anymore. We build schools now where teachers have offices, and they go teach in different rooms every period. So we're utilizing rooms much more than ever before in these buildings, the way we're designing them. And so this sets out a utilization factor in our secondary schools of 85%. So we're saying when that building is used, every room in it 85% of the time, it is, and for all intents and purposes, full. Now, you can crowd it a little more than that. You can do a little more. Some will argue this should be down around 70.75. I think the commission wanted to bounce it up to 87.5 and maybe 90 for middle schools. And our select committee had a problem with that, hence the bill. The other part is a little bit of a change, but think about elementary schools. When you're in your first grade teacher's class, you're generally there all day long, except for when you go to what elementary teachers call specials. You might go to music, physical education, computer lab, some other where you would leave and go into a separate room. Well, this is the 100% of homeroom instructional area method, so they're not going to count those other rooms really in the calculation, which, as we learned as a committee, is probably the right way to do this. So it codifies what's been practiced in the state, the 85% utilization, and then we also recognize this new 100% for homeroom instructional method for the elementary schools. And so I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In recent experience, we've found that the Capitol Commission seems to be literate in its interpretation. If you had four elementary schools in a district and two class units in each one of them, literally then you're saying that all four would have to be 100%. Is there any possibility that you can put some reasonableness in it instead of 100%?
Chairman Hirschman.
Mr. Chairman, this is really just when you figure out the design of a school. And so when you're working to decide how big should this school be, how many first grades, second grades, and so on with 100%. But so we recognize that building on 16 to 1, K through 3, and you have a school of 32 first graders, you are going to build two first grade classrooms. We know that. We're not going to build one. We're not going to build three. We're going to build 16 to 1 for that K through 3, and we're going to say that that's 100%. And then we won't count the art room, the music room, or the cafeteria gym that's commonly used as part of this overall total square footage. So it's really about focusing in on how many of those classrooms do we build, and we know we're going to build those other places in these elementary schools. So this 100% homeroom piece is only for these elementary schools as we design them based on that current enrollment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We also took testimony from experts in areas. We're not the only state that builds schools and manage our buildings this way. Many other states do. This 85% is generous by other state standards. The 100% is pretty much standard boilerplate for elementary schools. And it does only apply to those homerooms. We're not talking about square footage in hallways or square footage in gymnasiums or lunchrooms or anything like that.
Any other discussion on the bill? You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 8 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 8 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 10 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the Supreme Court, eliminating mandatory distribution of opinions and session laws as specified, repealing archaic provision and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 10, Supreme Court decisions and session laws, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watts, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill, or actually Senate File 10, do pass. And I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from Casper.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 10 does a couple things that are really great for the state. First, it's a cost savings. Second, it eliminates unnecessary waste in our landfills. And how does it do this? A lot of places don't want this copy, and so it eliminates the need to send this copy or these copies to folks that don't want them. And the cost savings for the state, they cost about $100 per copy. They make about 90 copies each run, and they do that about three times a year. So if it's mandatory, you can see where that adds up. And all of this information is available online today. So this is something that is unnecessary, and I would urge for your support and call for the question.
You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 10 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 10 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 12. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 12 is introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to child support payments, clarifying payment provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 12, Child Support Payment Procedures, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 12 do pass. And what this one does, if you just look on the second page, where it used to say that the child support obligation shall be paid through the clerk of court, we leave in the word clerk, but we put in through the clerk as defined by, and it's Wyoming Statute 20-6-102, A10, and so you don't have to look it up. I'll just read it to you. What the definition of clerk reads as, clerk means for the purpose of receipts, distribution, and disbursement of child support, the clerk of district court in the state where the obligor is ordered to make payments or where mandated by law, the state department unit. Because sometimes it's the state department unit. So there was some confusion there. So by using the definition, that clears up the confusion, and so people will pay their child support to the appropriate location. If there's no other questions, I call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does do so with the recommendation that Senate File 12 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 12 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 13. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 13 is presented by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code, providing definitions, providing for perfecting security interests when collateral is moved between jurisdictions, providing for governing law when filing of financing statements, providing for control of electronic paper, providing transition provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 13, Uniform Commercial Code Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Blickery, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Bill 13 do pass, and I defer to the Vice Chairman Blickery for explanation of the bill.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives, Senate File 13 is a culmination of a long, grueling year of really boring stuff where we reworked the Uniform Commercial Code and provided some definitions and made some changes that needed to be done so that we could compete, so business could compete in Wyoming with the rest of the nation. I hope that you'll vote for it.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 13 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 14, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to penal institutions, expanding correctional industries program, clarifying provisions, amending procurement requirements relating to correctional industries program, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 14, Correctional Industries, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Crone, and Walters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Croker, Miller, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 14 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the good representative from Cody.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to begin the discussion on Senate File 14, I think it's important to note basically what the primary mission of the Prison Industries Program is. First of all, it's a very small program within the Department of Corrections. They are highly coveted jobs and training. Only about 185 inmates are able to participate in the Prison Industries Program. And it basically gives these offenders opportunities to develop job skills, work habits, and to receive a trade that they can use once they are released from custody. Also, the purpose of the program is to attempt to lower the recidivism rate of these offenders and to successfully re-enter them within the society. Currently, under the statute, it allows for manufacturing of various items, but it also allows for a small window of services to be provided within the community. Now, this bill would expand that. Actually, this bill has three focuses that it tries to address. Number one, the current prison industry system has a separate account for each and every industry. So a provision in the bill would allow for one account that deals with all of the prison industries. Secondly, the bill would also provide for more flexibility in the procurement of various raw materials for manufacturing or service-related items so that they wouldn't have to go through the standard requisition protocol for the state. So it makes that a little bit easier, but it also that procurement section in the bill would also be in line with what other state agencies are doing. Finally, and probably more importantly, it brings all of the statutes relating to the service industry in line and allows for some additional services. So the testimony before the committee was very stark in that these industries, and if this expansion of services were to be permitted, it would not be allowed to compete with private industry. Statutorily that's prohibited. In addition to that, the Correctional Industries Advisory Board would vet and review all of these programs. If that board, which is appointed by the governor, felt there was a conflict with private business, then they would not proceed with the expanded services. So testimony was quite clear that if there was going to be any sort of expanded services into this private entity where there already is existing private business, those programs would not be permitted unless it was a partnership with those private entities. So with that, I would encourage the body's support of Senate File 14 and would open up to any questions. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Standing on and against this bill, I'd like to offer a little different version as to what I heard in committee. It wasn't quite as clear as I believe is being put forth. I'd just like to caution this body about one of three of the points of this bill. Not the separate accounts, not the flexibility in the procurement, but the expansion of the services. This is very troubling to me, and I feel that caution needs to be taken going forward. A weird testimony after a committee member asked a question of one of the individuals testifying there about what would happen if a private industry were to come into one of these areas that the prison industries currently runs. And a very troubling red flag was given as the answer. And she said probably, what we would probably do. Now understand, we've also heard testimonies about the prison industry training up welders and putting out bids on contracts and backing down after private industry was going after those contracts. We heard testimony about the state south to us dealing with an issue as far as construction where the prison industry had gone into this area. And now it's basically off limits. It's you can't compete as a private sector versus going against these wages that are offered. And something that is kind of troubling to me is this is an expansion of the service industry, and I don't feel that there are clear cut lines as far as what can be done once the private sector decides to go into these areas. And I think maybe what we could do as a compromise is we could maybe offer up, since my concern seems to be the blue-collar service industries, because that's what I'm involved in, maybe we could put the prison industry into the white-collar industry a little bit. Maybe what we could do is offer a program where anybody that's been sentenced to 25 years or more gets free tuition to the University of Wyoming, free tuition to the law school, and they can offer a service that's not provided very easily to indigent people for their civil cases. That sounds like a great idea to me, because the thing that I'm concerned about is we look around and they say, oh, you know, the example was a laundry facility. They're providing laundry services to hotels. And the question was, well, what would you do if a private industry wanted to come and move into this market? And the answer was probably. So the testimony wasn't as solid as I think is being led on here. I think it's important that we understand. The thing that keeps coming back to me is I keep remembering a movie where this exact thing happened, and the private industry comes to the prison guard and says, you know, you tell your missus thank you for this fine pie, and in with the pie there's a big fat load of cash. I'm not concerned about the problem of things that we can see. I'm worried about the things that we can't see. And without having these clear-cut standards and without having these clear-cut checks and balances that weren't explained to the committee as well as I think we're being led on to say, I think it's very troubling, and I'd just like the body to consider this bill.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one suggestion I would give, because I think the last speaker made clear that there's three things the bill is doing, and two of those I don't think he has an issue with. So if there's still an issue with the third section on services, maybe that's something that could be brought on second reading. But I would urge you to vote aye for the bill, and maybe we can have that discussion on second reading. I would just point out some of the things that they do for industry is they make the shirts and the pants for the guards at the prison. They have sewing machines. They order the materials, and they make those uniforms. They also do that for some of the sheriff departments that ask for it. The big one that they've really gotten into, they do Braille transcription. A lot of the prisoners have gotten trained in how to do Braille, and so they're the ones who actually do the punch hole dots for books in Braille. Those are some of the things that they've been doing. What they're wanting to get into, they've been doing products. What they like to do is some services, in particularly where the women's prison is located. It's a very small town. It doesn't actually have a laundry service, and so they'd like to be providing the laundry service. The hotels in that area are actually encouraging. They'd like to use that laundry service. There is an advisory industrial board, and so the advisory industrial board tries to make sure that in no way does the prison correctional industries ever compete against private industries. And that's what that board is set up to do, is to make sure of that. I also just wanted to make clear, there is absolutely, and let me make this crystal clear, because there was an implication just made that somehow there is corruption in the Department of Corrections. There was no testimony to that. There was absolutely, that is not accurate. It is a very well-managed department. and that has no place on this floor to make those type of allegations.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple follow-ups based on the comments from the representative from Where the Water Sweet. I think the testimony in the committee was pretty clear that if there was any sort of conflict and that conflict was raised by a private entity, that the Correctional Industry Advisory Board would not move forward with that service. And I think that was pretty clear. And I guess we can go back and forth about that. But I think another thing that's important to mention is that there was discussions of partnerships, and the good chairman of judiciary alluded to those partnerships. There was a talk of the town where the women's center's located, where private businesses there want to work with the prison to develop their own entities, the laundry service. There was also testimony that there could be some expanded braille transcription there as well. And so I think that the safeguards are in place. Not only do we have the statutory prohibition against competing with private industry, but we also have that Correctional Industry Advisory Board. And so I would urge the body to support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly here. In no way was I trying to imply that the current department is corrupt or engaging in any of these activities. What I was trying to let the body know is that this would open the door for the potential of corruption, because there's those private contracts involved with this.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise with some concerns on this bill also. I don't know why we're not going to follow the normal state procurement procedures with this group. They're not out there competing bang-bang in the private sector trying to be timely in everything. If they have to go through the normal process all the other state agencies go through, I don't have a problem with that. They're not there to be competitive with really anything else in the state.
Chairman Kingley.
Just to address the procurement issue real quick, the example they gave in committee was, so a sheriff's department will call them up and say, we need 5 new shirts. And each sheriff's department uses a different type of fabric or a different color or whatever they use. The problem is when you go through our procurement system, you have to put out an RFP. You have to advertise. You have to go through everything. By the time they went through that whole process, the sheriff has moved on to a different to find someone else to do it. They're not able to timely turn around orders by having to go through what they characterized as cumbersome procurement policies as to obtaining the raw materials. And for them, the raw materials is pretty much fabric, is what they were describing.
Representative Crone.
With seeing no further questions, I would call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 14 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 14 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 15. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 15, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to penal institutions, amending notification requirements for prisoners sentenced to custody of Department of Corrections, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 15, engrossed inmate transfers, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 15 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the representative from Rock Springs.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 15 stems from agencies not communicating very well with each other, and this is supposed to be a cleanup bill. When an individual is sentenced After they're sentenced, they have a pre-sentence investigation, a PSI, that's done by probation and parole. That is used by the judge in determining the length of the sentence and how the sentence will be carried out. Now, the confusion comes once the county jails are done with the pre-sentence investigation. Once the probation and parole is done with the pre-sentence investigation, the county jails have to transfer their inmates to the facility that's going to hold them permanently. So what there is there's a statute right now that it's supposed to be 10 days from the signing of the final judgment. So what the confusion has been is sheriffs haven't been notifying the facilities, whether it's the state penitentiary or another facility, in a timely manner. So there's been some disagreement about who is liable for that inmate's cost of living after those 10 days if the permanent facility doesn't come and retrieve the inmate. So what this bill does is it just basically says that 10 days will start from the time that the sheriff notifies the permanent facility. If there are no questions, I'd just call for the question on the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 15 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 15 is passed. Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 18 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to surveyors and engineers, repealing and recreating statutes governing engineering and land surveying, modifying definitions, provisions relating to the licensing board, licensing requirements, discipline and the practice of professional engineering and the practice of professional land surveying, making conforming amendments, providing rulemaking authority, renumbering and amending statutes relating to corners, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 18, engrossed, Professional Engineers and Surveyors Practice Act, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, and Dan Zwanitzer, one no. Representative Petroff, signed by Representative Blickery, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 18 do pass, and I defer to the good Representative Zwanitzer to explain the bill.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am pleased to present Senate File 18, which is a 48-page bill, but if it's okay with you, I will just go through it briefly in about 2 or 3 minutes instead of page by page, as we got to here in committee over the interim.
That is definitely okay with me.
I figured as you sat on corporations with me, Mr. Chairman, that you didn't need to hear it again either. What this bill does is a practice act for professional engineers and surveyors. These groups have come together. This is brought to us from their board for changes in their practice act to help enable a new generation, really, of surveyors. We've heard testimony that the average age now is 64 of surveyors, and it's just a barrier that there were times have changed in surveying and planning and engineers. So they came to us with a new practice act, and let me just run over some highlights of what this bill does. It removes the discipline-specific engineering licensure that we currently have. Wyoming is still one of, it's a handful of states that we still licensed by a discipline of engineering. And so we're getting rid of that. It doesn't make any sense to have discipline-specific licensure anymore. And we also are simplifying the education requirements for surveying licensure. The requirements now are going to be graduating from a surveying curriculum approved by the board of at least 2 years and having 30 semester credit hours in the discipline. We are talking a little bit about specific map sizes. Currently, we have some outdated language on specific map sizes. These are going to become part of the board rules and regs to allow them flexibility as these plotting things change every couple of years, and we don't need these in statute anymore. We trust the board and their discretion. We are changing the size of the board from 7 members to 9 members. One of these members is a state engineer, and then another additional member is going to be another land surveyor position. And really, the testimony was this is needed to have larger subcommittees for the review of applications when you have complaints come in, and to make sure we have a quorum, because a lot of these are very busy people. The board is self-funded, and so even the number of licensees are growing every year, and so there's no increase in cost to what we're doing, either to the state or to the registrants who are applying for licensure to support these extra members. So we don't anticipate any type of cost there. We are creating 2 new pathways of licensure for groups with these special qualifications. The first qualification is they've earned a doctoral degree in engineering, and so they get a license if they've had 4 years of engineering experience outside of their doctoral degree, because we heard how important it is not only to have an academic understanding of engineering, but really 4 years of experience on the ground, because there's some things you just can't learn in a classroom. And we heard from this from committee members and from the surveying community. The other requirement is people who still have their master's degree have to go through some additional land surveying and engineering requirements. They have to go through positional examinations to establish competency and have some journeyman training. Basically, nothing in the bill is superbly controversial. It was a bill that we worked on for a couple years now, actually. It just ran out of time last year in committee. It came over from the Senate. Again this year, a couple small changes that incorporated some concerns with DEQ that we put into the act. We testified in committee that the agency that we had brought in for engineering and DEQ was confident they could handle their responsibilities and met all the concerns. We did increase some penalties in the bill. It allows the board to impose civil penalties of up to $2,000 per violation. And so if there's any questions on the act, I'd be happy to walk you through it or answer questions. And I'd stand for questions at this time.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a few questions, and maybe the good representative can explain them to me. We just talked a few bills back about professional engineers and the requirements that it takes to become a professional engineer by standards, of which I am not. But it was quite a drawn-out process, and I wonder if this bill lends some confusion. The professional land surveying engineer does not have to have an engineering degree, if I understand that correct, but yet they do claim to be a professional engineer, and I think that that's confusing to me, because I would think a professional engineer would have an engineering degree and then go on through pursuant to getting a professional engineering certificate and licensure. And so I kind of understand the rest of the bill, and I understand the time it takes to be a land surveyor and the qualifications, but just that term of professional engineer confuses me a little bit, and hope that maybe he could explain that a little more for me.
Representative Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good former speaker was correct, and I'm trying to think. So it's a double practice act, I guess. It's for engineers and surveyors, and there's 2 different qualifications for each, but it is correct that surveyors are not engineers. If you have a surveyor who's acting on behalf of an engineer, on page 26 of the bill, you'll see that how, I guess, they interrelate. And really what we're trying to get to is most states have practice acts, and we're trying to establish comity between states to allow for engineers to have the same type of requirements in each state, the same as land surveyors. I can find the land surveyor track here as well. If you give me just a second, Mr. Chairman. In committee, we bounced around this bill, and I'm trying to remember the order we took it in. But there is a separate process. There's actually 2 processes to get certified as an engineer, and 1 process to get certified as a land surveyor. And I had the white bill down, and then we added some amendment language in the Senate. And now my page numbers are off, so I'm looking briefly.
to where it covers the educational requirements of public surveyors. But there was buy-in from both communities on their practice acts and how you'd become licensed in both of these. So I'll find it and meet with the former speaker on questions and be sure to walk him through that part of it and hopefully answer his questions to a better ability than I can do with the mic right now. Mr. Chair.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the good representative. Does the University Over the Hill offer courses that qualify a person to become a professional engineer under this act, I guess it is?
Representative Wanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, to the good representative from two speakers ago, page 16 covers land surveyors on needing 2 years and 30 semester credit hours and their process for land surveying. The second question is actually a very appropriate question because what we heard in testimony and what we found over the last 10 years is that the UW program didn't meet the necessary requirements of the old Practice Act. And so we were training engineers, and it wasn't in line with what the qualifications were to be a licensed professional engineer or surveyor in Wyoming. And so we actually have addressed that. They've worked with our university over the hill and with this act, and there's been a lot of coordination and communication to make sure the curriculum that we've developed and that we will continue developing as we build this new engineering building over there meets all the intent of the licensing act. And so we did have a lot of testimony that we did have some concerns, especially in the 90s, that our curriculum was not meeting the Practice Act, and those concerns have been resolved.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill we've seen many times here in the House, probably four or five times since I've been here. I think we've even passed it out of here a couple of times, but the gentleman on the other side didn't see it the same way we did. The fact that the engineers, the professional engineers and surveyors are together on this time, I don't have one email on this particular bill, I find really interesting because this was kind of a hotly contested issue before, and it was really kind of a turf battle.
No, you
do. I've got one now. But it's kind of a turf battle. For it to make it this far through the Senate and here to the floor speaks a lot for the bill with these people getting along finally.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as the previous speaker just mentioned, we've been working on this thing for a long time. And one of our legislators, that was a passion of his, and he's no longer with us. But I am a registered professional engineer, and the question was asked, do you get enough academic experience at the University of Wyoming to become a professional engineer? The short answer is yes. The process, and I don't think it's changed since I got my license, you take an exam at the end of your college engineering program. It's called an engineering and training, and that's the basic engineering. You have to pass that as a start on the professional engineering track, and then you have to have a certain number of years of experience, and I've lost track of that at the moment, and then after that you come back and take a professional engineering exam in the areas that you are expert in. Mine happens to be electrical engineering, but there's petroleum engineers and chemical engineers and so forth. And it is a pretty rigorous process, and the University of Wyoming meets the mark on that, or at least it did 60 years ago.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, following up on what the good chairman of Minerals points out, I think it's interesting here that their definition of a professional engineer has to represents himself to be a professional engineer by a sign, advertisement, letterhead, card, or verbal claim, or in any other manner. Quotes a fee for professional engineering service. I see some real gaps here with the definition of engineering. I would oppose this bill.
Representative Wanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it was really interesting to me because I ran into the good former chairman of this committee in the hall, and we talked about this. And this is a bill that's been here for 10 years, quite honestly. I don't need to
You know, I think I've seen it seven times in my 9 years, and it started in 2003. We passed it out of this body. The Senate's amended it. We couldn't concur. Senate's tried it. And we've basically held this Practice Act hostage for 10 years. We have not been able to move forward because of the same three concerns. We've addressed two of them, and there's still one lingering concern. We've had that debate in this body not last year, but before then, twice in a row. The concern is still somewhat there. And the concern will remain there, and I don't know how to answer or solve the problem, but I do know that this bill covers 95% of what makes everybody happy, and there's still concern on 5%. But we are severely limiting the people who can practice engineering in the state and the people who can move between states and get reciprocity or comity at this time. And our Practice Act does not reflect the times. It hasn't reflected the times really since 2003 when they brought this to us the first time, saying our Practice Act was out of line and out of date with what's really going in engineering, and that was 10 years ago. And so while I'm not sure we're going to ever agree on exactly 100% of the bill, 95% everybody agrees on, I do completely understand and sympathize with that. I thought we had a perfect interim committee bill that we were moving forward with the committee, and then certain people put some amendments on it in the Senate. And so I certainly have no problem working with the last speaker if we want to take that amendment off. I certainly voted that way before in the past, and I was a little intrigued to see that the Senate put that back on. The other body, and not that we should reference what happens over there. But the bill as it stands before you now is still a great bill that I think 98% needs to move forward, and we can certainly have the discussion. I will even bring the second reading amendment tomorrow, and we can have that discussion. I will walk you through where we've been for the last 10 years on this. But for today, please move it forward, and I'll look forward to having a great debate on what is and what isn't a professional engineer and who should be licensed, who shouldn't be, tomorrow, if that would please you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 18 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 18 has passed Committee of the Whole. Floor Majority Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 2, recommended do pass. Senate File 3, recommended do pass. Senate File 8, recommended do pass. Senate File 10, recommended do pass. Senate File 12, recommended do pass. Senate File 13, recommended do pass. Senate File 14, recommended do pass. Senate File 15, recommended do pass. Senate File 18, recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Croker, Chairman.
Representative Croker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Croker. The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. We're now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred, Senate File 98, Engrossed Motor Vehicle Lemon Law, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Halverson, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 124, engrossed frivolous liens, respectfully report sent back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrich, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Miller, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 62, State Board of Education Membership, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen, Somers, Teeters. One no vote, Representative Patton, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 4, engrossed Livestock Disease Reporting and Liability, respectively reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Dan Zwanitzer, and signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, and Winters, three no votes, Representatives Blake, Representative Campbell, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 6, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 19, engrossed Hospital District Elections, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 37, engrossed Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions 2, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 91, County Commissioners, Election to Modify Numbers, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 94, Public Library Endowment Challenge Program Extension, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
With that order of business of committee announcements, Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2 will meet on adjournment today in a informal hearing with the JAC, with the Senate committee. We have disbanded for the year, as you know, the JAC, but this will be an informal gathering to gather information from the superintendent on the Department 5 Superintendent of Public Instruction. And like all JAC proceedings, Mr. Speaker, this will be broadcast live on our internet.
at our LegisWeb website.
LegisWeb.state.wy.us, that one.
Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet in 10 minutes after adjournment today in House H-17 to hear the following bills. Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance. Senate File 87, Engrossed, Proof of Motor Vehicle Insurance. Senate File 45, Engrossed, Restricted Driver's License Modifications. And Senate File 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. to go over to take up Senate File 85, Game and Fish Resident Preference Points, Senate File 41, State Parks ATM Donations, Senate File 43, State Parks Acquisition of Lands.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H-18 to consider Senate File 28, Resident Preference Provisions, Senate File 22, Uniform Consumer Credit Code Amendments.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday, February 6th, upon adjournment in room H-17, where we will finish, hopefully, Senate File 60, Engrossed, Medicaid Reform. We will also hear Senate File 48, Medical Assistant Hospice Care, and Senate File 72, Engrossed, Medicaid Benefit Recovery.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please.
Mr. Speaker, the realtors have asked me to remind the body that their event is tonight. There seems to be some confusion as to when that is. It is tonight at 6 o'clock at that large hotel on the west end of town. They would like all of us to attend. Who can make it? Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, privilege on the floor.
Please.
Folks, I just wanted to pass the word along that a high school student from Newcastle, Conrad Farnsworth, successfully built a nuclear fusion reactor in his dad's garage. And this was in the Casper Star Tribune a couple days ago, but it was has been picked up and gone viral on the Associated Press. I just found it this afternoon on the Fox News website. And so a couple of facts. He started this about 2 years ago when he was 16. He's now a senior. Only about 60 people have ever succeeded in doing this at all, and we're also talking about world-class scientists with all the modern technology and stuff to their at their disposal. And so here's something that I don't know that anybody has ever done before, is Conrad's not here. He's up in Newcastle, but I have him here on speakerphone, so let's all give him a big round of applause.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Mr. Speaker, I'm just wondering if they can see Newcastle from outer space now. Remember, you have 47 minutes left to get second reading amendments into LSO on the budget bill. General file for tomorrow. Senate file 26, 27, 30, 33, 39, 68, 76, 82, 105, Senate Joint Resolution 1, Senate Files 38, 17, 67, 98, 124, 62, 4, 132, 6, 19, 37, 91, and 94. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, February 5, 2013. February 6, 2013. Thank you, Mr.
You've
Speaker.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 6, 2013.
2013.